My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, all. Welcome back to the EDP F1 podcast, where I'm sure we've all woken up following the weekend's events in Singapore, Marina Bay, and the 2013 Singapore Grand Prix. Joining me this week, very delighted to say, I've got Kyle Cumbers. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, how are you?
I'm not bad, thank you. A bit tired. This is post-Watford and Norwich City, so I'm a little bit of a daze. And I must admit, when it came to watching the race that I had recorded, I might have fallen asleep in it. I don't know if that was a work issue or just tired. How are you, Kyle?
I'm very well, very well. Yeah, it's good to see you. I'm not tired at all.
Good, so man. It's good. No, it's arriving in a different car each week for the for the podcast.
Yeah,
it's good to see. Good to see. I like it. DT's back.
Hello.
Dave Tilliott. It has been too long.
It has been too long.
I don't know when it last was, but it was too long ago.
It was hot last time. I remember that. I remember it being really, really hot, and I ran. I pretty much ran here.
It's been hot. During your time away, hasn't it? As well?
Yes,
you've been away.
Yes,
everyone was living the life.
Yeah, the odd picture that I put on Facebook, people were saying, "Oh, it looks hotter than that back home." And I was like, "It's probably not actually. It's just every time I seem to take a photograph of something really nice, all of a sudden the clouds come in and then they disappear 5 minutes later." But so apparently I did miss some quite good weather here, but I'm not upset. I think I was. I think
you were right. Wait, which Caribbean island was it?
I did 7 days in St. Kitts and 2 days in Antigua.
Oh, good grief. It's not bad, is it? It's all right. And excitingly, you've driven a Lotus in the last day or two.
It was just before I went away on holiday, so it was about a month ago. But yes, the latest Lotus, which is the new Exige Roadster. I had that for 23 hours.
Exactly.
Exactly 23
like,
hours.
Almost like a Le Mans.
Yeah. So I picked it up at 9 o'clock in the morning one day, and I had it back by 8 o'clock in the morning the following day. And fortunately enough, the weather was perfect for one day, and it was awful the day I gave it back. So it held up long enough for me to get the roof off and give it the good scene too that it needed.
Quite nice. Enjoyed it.
Oh, it was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And I have to say, it was very, very childish. If anyone from the Norwich area saw a grey Lotus Exige with red leather interior driving through the city quite a lot, that was probably me, because it sounded so fantastic that I had to just drive everywhere.
23 hours of laps around Norwich in a Lotus City. Didn't even sleep, did you, DT?
No.
Brilliant stuff. You can see a review. I'm gonna give you a plug here. You can see a review of it on your website. Will it be at some point?
Yeah, the written review is up on ipiston.co.uk. There will be a video review of it coming out at some point. It just needs to be edited together by someone probably more capable than me. And also, hopefully, that someone else, so that I don't have to look at myself and hear myself talking, because I hate it.
Well, it'd be nice for people out there to put a face to the voice.
Yeah, it'd be nice to actually finally do a video review that actually gets to see the light of day, because it's actually my fourth one, and all the other ones have been so bad that I've condemned them.
Oh, dear. Oh, well, hopefully this will see the light of day.
Yeah, this one was actually scripted, so... it was it wasn't quite so Erminaring, and it actually had some consistency and ran.
You undervalue the worth of umming and ahring. I think a few of us make a good track of that. The EDP F1 Formula One video advert weird thing that I've done will one day get the light
looking
of day.
Looking forward to it, I think.
it's probably out of date now. It was probably more in date when we did it.
Yeah, it wasn't the running joke about Mark 21.
Yeah, it was. A few things have happened since then, but still.
See, if we'd have got one of us to jump on one of the other go-karts and then be taken around the track, like riding on it like a taxi, then we could have used that. That would have been really up-to-date.
Would have been fine, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it dangerous sitting on a cart? Is it even possible?
I don't know.
It's very, very dangerous.
We could have given it a go.
It's more dangerous than an F1 car.
I was going to say, was it even dangerous? Now, anyone would have thought we're trying to delay talking about the actual race in Singapore. I don't know if that's actually true. Maybe. I mean, it wasn't great. Not a lot happened. I kind of find that to be a typical Singapore Grand Prix a little bit, Kyle.
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, as I said last time in the preview, I like it. mainly because it looks good. But the races haven't been great the last few years. Maybe a tip is just to take Bettel out of the race. And it was a very good race.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
The battle for second was pretty good.
We barely saw him all race, did we, really?
But, yeah, it wasn't the best. But apart from the last 10 laps with the Mercedes and Webber coming through the pack, made it a bit more exciting, but, yeah, it wasn't the best.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The last few races, laps kept it interesting. I mean, I do like watching them go around the track because it's amazing how close they get to the walls, really, isn't it? And they you know, they're always going to bash into them at some point and brush it here or there.
Yeah, but do you not find that with Singapore, because it is such a modern street circuit and it's actually so wide, it doesn't seem to have that same feel that, say, Monaco does. So when they do close to the walls in Monaco, it seems amazing because it's bumpy and, you know, there's camber and it's actually quite narrow and all that sort of stuff, and it looks fantastic even though you never get any overtaking in Monaco. But Singapore just seems... they never really look like they're going fast.
Yeah, that's
because it's quite wide open, and there's still no overtaking. So. In reality,
it's even worse than Monaco, but it's got floodlights.
Yeah, exactly. I think for the first like 3 or 4 laps, you're like, "Oh, it looks really cool," you know. And, you know, you see someone with a sparkly helmet, and you know, and the cars look different under the lights and what have you. But then after a while, it does become. Slightly, well, I think I said dull as dishwater, I think is what I said to someone the other day. But yeah, it is a bit of a spectacle. But I think they should put lights on the front of the cars, get rid of the floodlights, do a bit Le Mans 24 hours.
I like this. Yeah,
yeah. That'd be quite fun.
Yeah.
It'd be quite interesting.
Just put them at the end of the nose or something.
Yeah.
Sort of light up their helmet so you can actually...
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Just so they take mag lights to the side of their...
Yeah. Yeah, good luck with that one. A DT you weren't in last time, so you've got an extra racer's benefit for this. Sebastian Vettel, driver's champion?
I'm going to say reluctantly that he has got to walk away with it now.
Yeah.
Because he's got into the bit of the... I mean, he's a bit hit and miss historically in Europe, yet he's cleaned up. So now he's getting to the point of the season where he always comes good. So... You know, I think the other teams have to do something pretty fantastic to actually get anywhere near him. And that Red Bull looked a bit iffy at the start of the season, but it now looks mighty.
Yeah, this could be, I suppose, a pretty epic trouncing of everyone else. I haven't really considered the fact that, I mean, he's obviously miles ahead, but he could actually end up annihilating everyone by the end of the season.
It could be another 2011, couldn't it?
Did he win it in Korea there? I can't remember now. But I mean, Toto Wolff said he wouldn't be surprised if he wins the final 6 races. And the way, well, at times he's 2 seconds a lap quicker, which is just, that's just stupid. So if it hadn't been a safety car, I think they worked out like 60 seconds ahead, which is, it's not good.
It is incredible. A lot of talk about the booze on the podium. I had a great thing from Gary Anderson. I think it was a few weeks ago, actually. It may have been a few races ago. He's saying that Sebastian Vettel deserves a fair amount of credit because he always wants to win races. He doesn't want to do just what he needs to do. He's not a Professor Prost. He's not a calculating Niki Lauda world champion. He will go for it and he will win and he will always push so that he wins in the best way possible. I mean, in that respect, he's got to... It's a shame that the frustration of him winning so often is portrayed in booze.
Yeah, Vettel's a bit of a funny one because there are moments where you think, I should really like this guy. You know, he's actually got a really good sense of humour. He grew up on British comedy and loves Fawlty Towers and all that sort of stuff.
He loves Fawlty Towers. It's all right.
Yeah, exactly. So he likes Cleese. He's right. but no, he's got a good sense of humour. And when he first came into Formula One, he was a very likeable person. Since he's had a bit of success, he has become a bit more arrogant, and sometimes you see him he seems to act a bit like a bit childish, which people don't like. But I think the big thing is the fact that he's dominating, and he's dominating in an unexciting way from the fans' point of view. He's doing amazingly well at his end, but it's not like he's qualifying 6th or 7th and then he's charging through the field. You know, he's just banging it on pole, he's giving himself a good old lead, and then he's bringing it home. And I think if, you know, I don't think if anyone was doing that, I don't think they'd get the booze. But I think there are quite a few drivers that might get to that point with the booze if they were dominating the same way that he was.
Yeah.
You know, if Alonso was doing exactly the same, then I think there's a chance there might be a few people that would do that.
Certainly off the back of four of three previous years doing it.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think
was only winning the title anyway.
I think there's quite a few sort of little things that sort of built up to it. I mean, obviously the Mark Webber Malaysia Multi 21. I think also people really like Mark Webber, and he sort of seemed everybody sees it as Sebastian Vettel always gets the luck. You know,
well,
it's tiny little things, and I mean even like the Italian Grand Prix was booted there, but like I said Lewis Hamilton was booted there last year because a Ferrari didn't win.
Yeah.
and the British Grand Prix, obviously Lewis Hamilton was winning, wasn't he? And obviously had the problem, so they're cheering for that. So small things, and I think a lot of people are probably booing. They don't really know why they're booing him at the moment. I think it's just part of the fun when he wins a race.
Yeah, it's sort of.
He probably won't get booed at Korea because nobody will be there next time.
Yeah.
So.
No, yeah, we'll certainly get stuck into that.
You know, you saw on the podium, everyone booed, and then he came out with that little quip. He said, "Oh, it's a little group. They get on a coach together or something like that. They travel around all the races." So that part of Sebastian Vettel is actually quite. You can't help but like that sort of that comical side of him, slightly sarcastic, and a bit, you know, from a British point of view, you know, you can't help but like him from that point of view. But it is all the other little things, like you said, the Multi 21 thing, some of the little comments he's made, some of the things he said in interviews, and just sometimes his general demeanour, and he just comes across as I just want everything my way. Regardless of whatever happens, and he's in a kind of a position where he can do that. Yeah, fair enough. But people don't like to see it. People like to see a bit of humility in their champions, and I guess that's probably not what they're not warming to. I guess
it's an interesting situation because I suppose whatever happens this year, he's getting pretty close to the point where he's going to need to start doing this in another team to move on. I suppose the other interesting point is that. The director of the television coverage in Singapore had a bit of a dilemma when Sebastian Vettel was about to cross the line. Meanwhile, Mark Webber's car was on fire. I mean, if that didn't sum up probably a reason why most people are getting frustrated by the apparent invincibility of one car and the collection of issues that the other one has.
Yeah.
Mark Webber's gearbox giving out. I think it was a cooling issue with the engine, wasn't it? And water in the engine, and it all went sort of wrong. Yeah. And now he's going to have a 10-place grid penalty in Korea for getting a lift on Fernando's car. More apparently for the point that when Fernando stopped, Mercedes almost went into the back of him than anything
else. Yeah, there was two things. I mean, when I saw it on TV and then I heard he had a 10-place grid penalty, I was like, why? Why? Yeah. Why on earth? You know, loads of people have done it. And then I saw some CCTV footage from one of the Singapore buildings, and you can see him running along the track, and then he himself nearly got run over twice. So you can kind of say it's unsafe. But then again, someone then posted a picture on Twitter, I think, of one of the stewards, the driver steward.
It's Derek Warwick.
Getting a lift. It was either getting a lift or giving a lift to someone, I can't remember.
I think Webber tweeted that picture. But
Also didn't help. There was in the GP2 race earlier, I think there was a crash on the slowdown lap between two cars. I think one was pulling in early, and there was quite a big crash. So obviously the stewards were aware of it at the time. So that didn't help. But because it was his third.
Third reprimand, yes, yeah.
Yes, so
it's sort of tally.
Yeah, just sums up his season. Yeah.
We're going to miss him, aren't we? Mm. With all that sort of fun and games. Yeah.
I want him to
change
come
his
back
mind.
As a pundit.
Oh,
I think he will be a brilliant pundit.
Or steward.
Or race steward, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my boy. There are going to be some vendettas settled when he's in charge of a race.
But I think him, obviously, he's obviously got his Le Mans stuff coming up, but Anthony Davidson has his Le Mans stuff, but he's still a pundit. I think Mark Webber would be brilliant fun. Because he's quite a modern Formula One driver, he could probably get in with a lot of the drivers and get in places, and he tells it how it is as well. He doesn't mess around.
I expect Sky are busy working on that deal right now.
Yeah, that would be a bit of a dream team.
Okay, DT, do you want to give your pit stop impression in person now you're back? Can you even remember it?
It was a one-time deal, I think.
Well, that's okay, because everyone will get to hear it now. There it was. EDPF1 pit stop time. We've really only touched on Red Bull and their joys, so shall we start at McLaren? Because I think over the course of the weekend at Singapore, this was the biggest story. Martin Whitmarsh suggesting they'd love to get Fernando Alonso back in the team if he was available. Yeah. I get his argument that, well, you know, who wouldn't? You know, obviously I was just answering it honestly, but at the same time, he's not stupid. He knows what... Well, I assume he's not stupid.
I think Ron Dennis went. Appreciate Alonso back in his team after what happened in 07. Yeah, I don't. Is it negotiation tactics with Button and Perez's people, or?
Well, this was the other thing, because then he then went on to say, no, but Button will definitely be here next year. Perez, we will announce it at some point. But then Jensen wouldn't talk about it for the rest of the weekend. So
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff presumably going on with Jensen.
Well, maybe the team have just said. Just try and avoid it, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, because in my head I thought Button was going to be there for at least another couple of years, because I thought Honda would probably be quite keen on him being around, because if there isn't a Japanese driver that they can support through their, you know, they're bringing their engines back, why not have a driver that the Japanese public love, and they love Jensen Button, so it makes sense for him to kick around. They know him from before, obviously he drove for them for quite a few years and what have you, so you know that could be an interesting tie-up. But obviously lately it's kind of made me think, well actually, is this the time that McLaren think, right, we're just going to have a clear out and we start afresh? But then again, if they couldn't get someone like Alonso, who could they get really to kind of, because they need a top driver, they need a world champion level driver, and whilst Jensen hasn't had some great results lately, he's still I think driving probably as well as he's ever done, and he is capable of some great results with the right car.
What can McLaren attract in terms of driver at the moment is probably another issue. I mean, this season has got to be, I mean, one of the worst I've seen as an entire season.
Yeah, well, I thought it was going to be as bad as 2009, but I think it's far worse.
I think, especially when they're not even taking Q3 seriously at the moment.
No.
And just saving tyres for that. It's not really the McLaren way. Yeah. And I think it'd be pretty harsh on the two drivers to say it's their fault, really. They built a poor car, the fifth quickest car. Well, fifth or sixth on early in the season. And, I mean, Perez was... We were told, you know, he's only 22, he's the same age. Hamilton came and he's got a couple of years more experience and he's one for the future, and to get rid of him after a year seems a bit harsh.
It does a smack of sort of the muddled thinking that seems to be hitting the place at the moment.
Yeah.
Because the issues with developing the car, which is probably the biggest thing, that they've arrived at race one with a poor car in the past.
Mm.
There's just been no real improvement, and you wonder if they've lost maybe some of the... expertise and skills behind the scenes.
We'll also wonder whether or not they think about Perez that they maybe went for the wrong option, because they had a few options really on the table, didn't they, when they made that decision. They probably had Hülkenberg on the table, they probably had De Resta on the table, and at the time Perez was flying pretty high. Maybe it was all a bit, you know, that maybe the stuff that was going on with Perez and him doing so well for those few races made them go a little bit sort of rose-tinted, but you know what I mean, they looked at him slightly differently to the other drivers, and maybe they've just feel like they made the wrong decision in that, and maybe they think they should have gone for someone like a Hülkenberg or De Resta that maybe would have been a little bit more solid for them, because although Perez has seemed quite feisty this year,
and he's been quite feisty with Button, and he's on, you know, he's raced hard. You know, if you look at the points difference between him and Button, even though Button's got naffle points, he's still got a hell of a lot more than Perez. So, you know, that McLaren need consistency as well as speed, I suppose.
And to think he was arriving thinking he would be battling for wins. Moves us on nicely to the driver situation. Obviously, since last time out, Kimi was confirmed at Ferrari. Him and Fernando at Ferrari next season is going to be gold, I would like to think, although it may not be quite as sparky as we all hope for. But big loss for Lotus. They have a seat to fill, and Kimi's back hurt a lot at the weekend. But it didn't show it. He finished third. In fact, he's probably... We'll get to it, obviously, but one of the drivers of the day, I would argue.
Yeah, that was quite impressive.
What do you reckon about Ferrari next year? It's going to be fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll be interesting, because they haven't... They've made reliable cars for the last few years, but they haven't really made a car since 2008 that's been particularly competitive. You know, not in the grand scheme of things. You know, they've managed to get good results, but I think that's more to do with the fact that they've got good strategists and a good driver, you know, a good couple of drivers. So it'd be interesting to see whether or not they can actually produce a reasonable car next year.
The wind tunnel's reopening now, isn't it?
Wind tunnel's reopening. They've obviously got everyone's got brand new engines, so, you know, it'd be interesting to see whether Ferrari, because obviously they make their own engines, whether or not that's going to be powerful enough, whether it can go against the Mercedes and the Renaults and maybe. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, I'm quite excited in a way. I like Kimi at Lotus, because I think Lotus and Kimi suit each other, because Lotus like to play the kind of we're the cool kids kind of on the F1 pack grid. You know, they put out funny tweets and, you know, odd hashtags and, you know, the various different things, and Kimi just doesn't want to do anything other
than has nothing to do with it.
And they suit each other quite well. But you know, I think him being back in a Ferrari side by side with Alonso will give them an amazing pairing. You know, it might even push Alonso to be... I don't think Alonso needs to be pushed, but maybe...
Well, no. As we said, having a rear gunner hasn't really worked for him the last few years.
No, I think Kimi will be fine with the whole inter-team battle, because I think he doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly. He'll just do what he wants to do. He'll just get on with it.
I think Alonso, it'll be interesting to see how he gets on for the year, because his history, he's always liked rear gunner. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see
how he gets on. I think Alonso's matured a bit.
Hopefully, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like he has, from all the press stuff. He obviously did quite a lot of press in Singapore. Lotus seat to fill then. I mean, they had a pretty good weekend. Roman was a little bit unlucky mechanically. I think they had high hopes that he was going to finish quite well as well. Too.
I did love his radio message when they told him no.
Poor old Roman, he doesn't get the breaks. But it does sound like, I think Eric Brulé has pretty much confirmed he'll be there next year. So who goes
it'd
along?
Be sensible for them to keep. They need a bit of consistency.
Yeah. So who sits alongside him? Who would you guys pick? I'll come to you first.
Nico Hülkenberg.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think Massa's the other option, but I think Hülkenberg's the... Obviously, Massa's age goes against him. I think Hülkenberg's the future, and it'd be terrible if he wasn't in F1 next year. And it looks like he's going to lose his Sauber seat due to Russian money. So yes, Nico Hülkenberg for me.
Yeah, totally agree.
God, imagine Gutierrez and Sorokin and Sauber next year. That could be carnage, to be honest.
The opposite of a dream team.
Well, clearly a nightmare. But I mean, Sauber have had a few good results recently. They're actually on my list to come to next. Had a few decent showings of late, a little bit of return to form, because I mean the start of the season has been pretty turgid.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's just they don't seem to have made any steps forward in terms of their car,
no.
Or at least not anything that's been obvious. So whether or not it's just having some tracks that maybe have suited them more, maybe the drivers maybe getting on top of the setup a little bit better.
Well, Gutierrez has tended to do quite well at Singapore, I think, in the other Formula One here.
I don't know if it's more like teams like Toro Rosso have dropped back, haven't they, and Force India saw the new sort of Pirelli tyres, and them dropping back or Sauber sort of making a step forward.
Force India, I want to bring up too, and maybe most pertinently, Paul de Resta. I mean, if a beer company did nightmare runs of form, this would be it, really, wouldn't it?
He's had three for three, isn't he?
Terrible run of it, and you have to say they've been his mistakes, really. It's not necessarily been bad luck.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's just, I mean, drivers do have short, you know, they have periods where things seem to not go their way. Maybe this is Paul de Resta's bad run. I think we probably have to wait until the end of the season to see whether or not it's whether or not he's lost it.
Big few weeks coming up.
He's not necessarily always a happy person, is he? So maybe his temperament is affecting his driving. I don't know.
Yeah, Dower Scots, eh? I haven't written Caterham down on here, our old Hingham pals, but Guido van der Garde seems to be doing pretty well, although they still look some way off from getting back to 11th in the 10th in the Constructors' Championship. Yeah, I would say a bit of a worry.
Probably the the better of the two drivers, I think, for throughout the season in terms of, or at least the most interesting out of the two in terms of what he's managed to achieve. I think Shell Peacher seems to have fizzled into obscurity.
He does. Your man, DT. Oh, yeah, man. What happened? It just went to his head. He heard about it and he couldn't regain his passport. Yeah, exactly.
But Caterham did have another interesting thing on the Singapore Grand Prix because they launched a new car.
Indeed.
Yeah, so a concept, but it will become a real car.
So they've got that going on. They confirmed their Renault partnership in terms of engines for the next 3 years, which I think is a big thing in terms of... Don't know what they're doing with the Red Bull technical help they've been getting, whether that's going to carry on as well.
I imagine it probably will.
I heard it was continuing though.
It would make sense, I think, because they're continuing with the Renault engines and they've got continued Renault partnership with their road car plans because they want to start making 4x4 crossovers and stuff, which I think is a bit weird considering the fact that it's a car company that's been based for like 40 years on making lightweight sports cars and they want to go and make 4x4s. But anyway,
they're going to motorbikes as well, aren't they?
Yes, Lotus were going to.
Yeah,
Lotus. I think, I don't know if Caterham are, maybe. Maybe they are as well. There's David Snowstone left them. I think Fernandez would try and do anything that Lotus do.
He's very much a businessman, isn't he? So. But yeah, the Lotus thing, that was a bit weird. They're not going to be made by Lotus, maybe by some Italian company.
Stick a Lotus badge on it. It's worked so far. There's obviously lots of things in place at Caterham, and now that they've settled in at their home, it'd be lovely if it all just came together. But I'd like to think that they could maybe somehow grab 10th place in the Constructors' Championship before they get to the last two laps of the last race, because I don't think they're going to luck out like that again.
I feel a bit sorry for those teams at the back because they more so, it seems now than any other than in years past, that they get so little screen time, other than when they're getting lapped.
Well, I was thinking about this as well on the BBC's graphic of the Constructors' Championship. You're literally only missing out one team on it. You might as well have all 11, because what's the point in only having 10? I know that there's a cut off, but you know. Why not even include the other one?
Yeah.
But there we go. Anyway, that's it. By the by, isn't it? By the by. Right, so at this point, we get to discuss all our things of the weekend. A driver and a goat of the weekend. To start, who was the main man, Kyle?
It's going to have to be Vettel.
Oh.
In a way. Yeah, as we said earlier, it's dominant performance. But also got to be mentioned for Alonso and Raikkonen as well for coming through the pack and getting good podiums. So
both of them had great runs, really, didn't they? Through and Fernando Alonso's start. We've seen it time and time again.
It's a Ferrari start, isn't it? Massa had a decent start.
But Kimi will be looking forward to that then.
But Massa was ahead of Fernando
on
the grid, so Fernando had a blinding start.
Fantastic. Do you agree with that then? Who would be yours, DT? Kimi had a very good race, I thought. But
yeah, I'm gonna give it to Kimi just because
his back hurt.
Just because,
he had to have injections in his back.
10 places at Singapore. It's pretty good going. All in all, Alonso almost gets it for his start. I can't give it to Vettel just because. I think that a large percentage of his dominance is that car. I mean, Adrian Newey has refined it so well, and it's such a honed package. I know Webber's not having a great deal, great time of it of late, but you know, it is a, it's like the old Colin Chapman Lotuses from years and years ago. They're either really, really fast or they broke, because they're very, very fragile. And the, some of the fastest cars will be brilliant until they're, until they pop.
Right on the edge, isn't it? You know, right on the edge. I mean, Vettel's racing at the start was grand, but I would probably edge towards Kimi. Goat, what let the weekend down? Who was all over the place?
A tough one, really. Joint Ricciardo and De Resta.
Yeah, they both, crashes. Both yeah. just drove into walls, didn't they, pretty yeah. much?
I haven't really got one, to be perfect.
I have one. It was the guy who decided that all the wonderful fireworks that would light up Singapore would all go off when the driver crossed the line, because all we ended up getting was a load of footage of these great fireworks while presumably everyone was still racing to the end. And yeah. you're like, can we watch the race? The race is still going on.
Yeah.
We don't do the fireworks at the podium. No one cares then.
Yeah.
No, we get bored. Just not while the race is going on. Mm. Sort it out. Bernie needed to sort it out. Team of the weekend, top team. I've gone for Mercedes because I think they're continuing to prove what was a tumultuous time at on occasion with Pirelli and all that sort of stuff, that they've genuinely sorted out most of the problems they've had. And going forward for next year, you'd like to think they're well placed.
So, I mean, you're better to help me out this with the position, well, the finishing positions on your little list there.
Let's get out the official information.
The official information. Yeah, so where are we? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what, fourth and fifth ended up, which is okay, but
at this point last season they'd have been like 12th and 13th.
Well, at one point Nico Rosberg was second and he was, you know, quite a way bit ahead of everyone else, and then all of a sudden he was like 9th, and that was track position. That wasn't sort of because of pit stops and stuff, and it was like, what's going on there?
I might have been asleep at that point.
They're a bit unlucky, the safety company, because they decided not to to come in and thought everybody else would come in, and so maybe the safety car was a long time a safety car, and if it had been a few less laps, Alonso's and Raikkonen's tyres may have gone off, and they may have got second and third. So,
yeah.
All right then. Okay, so a different team. Who are you thinking?
Team of the weekend for me probably was, I was going to say Ferrari, because their strategy was very good. So although I can't remember where Massa finished up, but their strategy to get Alonso up into second,
that's not bad, is it?
Was pretty good, I think.
Can I go for Adrian Newey and his team of designers?
You can indeed. every week, every race weekend, you can do that, Carl. Don't worry about that. All right then. Highlights. I mean, I've given mine to Webber for getting his lift, because that was exciting.
Yeah. My highlight would just be the last 10 laps, because the first 51 were so terrible.
The first lap was all right. The first corner.
First corner was
first right. Two, three
Everybody
corners.
Cheering on Rosberg.
Yeah, that's it.
yeah, until he stuffs it after about 10 metres later. No, yeah, the end of the race was actually quite interesting. There was one small highlight for me that was then immediately dashed, which was when at one point I let myself believe that the button might actually get a podium.
Oh,
yeah, and then way back.
Pretty much, it's David Beckham and Nicky Lauda talking to each other. I'll never see it happen.
Was that, yeah.
I was a big David Beckham fan, it was quite amusing.
So I missed a lot of the build-up, unfortunately. I didn't watch qualifying, or I watched Q3, but I didn't watch any of the build-up for that either, so I didn't get to see any of the stuff that's going on.
David Beckham, yeah, he was in Singapore, wasn't he, wandering around?
Although I was quite pleased that I managed to watch this Grand Prix live. It's the first Grand Prix I've watched live for 4 or 5 Grand Prix now.
Wow.
Which is very rare for me. I'm usually, you know, like, I will ignore funerals to make sure I watch Formula 1.
Did it convince you to watch more?
No, not really. No.
Well, career, I'm sure that will spark your interest.
Yeah, I'm just just waiting for Austin and Interlagos.
Yeah, quite.
They'll be reasonably interesting.
But everyone else should stay with us, because we've got some great races coming up. It'll be brilliant, great podcast. Stay tuned.
The podcast will always be interesting.
This is much more exciting 30 minutes than the racing. We'll get stuck into Korea with our second part two of our podcast for this week. But gents, thank you very much for your time, much appreciated. You can get hold of us all on Twitter at EDPF1 for the official feed, and we'll also got we've got Caterham and Lotus News at edp24.co.uk/F1. There's also a link there to the to this very podcast. I am at Michael J Bailey on Twitter. DT
at Dave Tillier,
and Kyle
at K Cumbers.
Awesome stuff. We'll be back in a few days to look ahead to Korea. Until then, take care.